me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Kevin.
And I'm John.
And this is 60 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look back at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies, and we're breaking them all the way down.
Dear friends, dear listeners, hello,
so
Andrew and John.
Andrew Miller.
Hey there.
Andrew Miller, live on tape from Houston.
Live on tape.
Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks again for having me.
We're so glad that you're with us. It's always fun to have an expert perspective where Kevin and I are deficient.
We're novices.
Yeah.
We're mere padawans.
This has been fun. It's been a blast talking about a movie that I was not familiar with.
I feel like we're picking up steam as well on the plot of the movie here.
And it would be about right if you say that I'm an expert in this for it to be that my expertise is in something this stupid. But I'm going to take it.
No. My expertise is Karate Kid universe.
Ooh.
What else am I most versed in?
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, big fan. I can't touch John on his Star Wars knowledge.
Man, I'm a Star Wars and Lord of the Rings guy myself.
Yeah, you are.
Just, it's always kind of been.
What are we all drinking?
Oh, good question. Andrew, what are you drinking?
I am drinking Fernet and Coke, the national drink of Argentina, with Coke from the United States and Fernet from Italy, obviously, to celebrate. To celebrate Christopher Lambert being Scottish through France through who knows where
by way of Little Neck in Switzerland.
Switzerland, he's a man of the world.
Yeah, it's true, truly, truly.
What are we drinking, John?
We're drinking Balvenie Double Wood,
Scotch.
Yes, Scotch single malt Scotch whiskey.
Yeah.
That they age in. I can't remember what the casks are. One of them's
is that the one they make with the quickening?
I think they do.
They had a dash of quickening.
I think they do. It's a peat, barley,
yeah,
and quickening.
A healthy dash of quickening.
It also goes through like a quickening process, I assume.
It totally does.
That's when they shake the barrel a little bit.
That's where the alcohol comes
from. They hit it with some blue lightning, and it's good to go.
They zap it.
That's how you age something quickly.
But this is a tasty, tasty scotch in honor of the Highlander.
It's a movie maybe undeserving of a good scotch.
No, it's really not. It should be like the dog
shit. This should be like some Cutty Sark or some blended shit that costs $20 a bottle. But
oh, man.
That's neither here nor there. Balvenie's a good scotch. This is a good movie. It's a lot of fun to talk about.
Absolutely.
It was a blast to watch. Lots of people in it that I love. Some people in it that I'm indifferent about.
We're glad you're all with us.
Yes, thanks
on this
for coming back.
Fine evening or day or morning or whatever time it is, wherever you are.
You in Indonesia is probably morning now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Again, thanks to Andrew for being our guide on this movie and for recommending it to us for the treatment, because it has been a blast.
So I'll try to bring us up to speed a little bit. We got this Scotsman named Connor McLeod. He's found out that he's an immortal.
What?
He's taking his first step into a larger world.
Ben, why didn't you tell me?
You mean old Ben Kenobi?
Old Ben? I don't know any Obi-Wan.
Sort of a strange hermit.
That man, he's nothing but a crazy old wizard. Anyway.
Oh, that's so good. So many ties.
So we got Connor McLeod. He's found out that he's immortal from this Guy Ramirez, that's Sean Connery, obviously, who's also an immortal. There's an evil immortal out there named the Kurgan or a Kurgan.
He's a Kurgan.
Or he's just flat out Kurgan. If you're nasty.
Some Kurgan.
he's some Kurgan.
That's some Kurgan.
That is some Kurgan. Is Charlotte's Web.
Yes. That's fine Kurgan. But so there's some kind of shit that goes on in a mortal world where at some point in time, they're all drawn to a common place to fight until there's only one remaining. And that person will win the prize.
Oh, it's just lazy. That's lazy.
Yeah. There's a lot of quickening going on. That is, we gather when I don't know if it's when you touch.
It's their version of the force.
When you tap into the force, essentially.
Yeah.
Or you absorb someone else's quickening when you kill them.
Yeah.
It's all unclear.
Sometimes it's just when you're running on the beach.
That's right.
Totally.
When check out that deer. Quickening!
Mom, I'm going to mind meld with this deer. Yeah. I feel the quickening.
We are brothers!
we're brothers! All right. All right, okay. Sean. Cool, bro. but yeah, basically what's going on is now we're jumping around in time a little bit, but for the most part, I think from here forward, we're in 1985, yeah. Which is present day.
We have some brief flashbacks for comedic effect, but that's it.
Yeah. We saw Kurgan killed Ramirez, mm-hmm. who was like the sensei, the shidoshi to...
he's my shidoshi.
Shidoshi Ramirez.
Shidoshi Ramirez, the Egyptian.
Yeah. What the fuck?
But we're in 1985. McCloud is there. Kurgan is there. Mm-hmm. They're sort of playing a little game of cat and mouse. McCloud's somewhat suspected in like a murder that I guess he actually is guilty of.
Yeah. He definitely murdered the guy that's dead.
He killed another immortal, chopped his head off, which is the only way you can kill an immortal. He's sort of set up now a date with the forensics officer who she doesn't know that he knows that she's a cop.
Right. Because
he is reading up on all the latest books about metallurgy. And he read the book that she wrote about metallurgy and ancient swords. And that's mainly what she's interested in more than him, though, is the swords.
Do we get how he found out her name? Because he calls her Brenda when he first meets her. So how did he know? Dude. Do we think that my assumption is that he's such a nerd and just has been around for like just a voracious reader.
He's just read everything.
Is that maybe he'd already read her book and recognized her. It's like, holy shit, what are the odds?
He's a groupie.
That's the impression that I've gotten. Like she's slumming it as a forensic scientist because she couldn't make it as like with her book about metallurgy of swords, which probably isn't really a New York Times bestseller.
No,
except we're about to see she's living in the pimpest apartment in the world.
Second only to his apartment is better.
Yeah, but he's had his for centuries.
Yeah.
I don't know how she's paying for this, but we'll discuss.
I think she's got family money. Personally.
Okay, some shit's going on. Yeah, that's true. Who else would go to school and study metallurgy and ancient swords?
And then be like, you know what? Never mind. I'll go be a forensic evidence person.
Right. That's totally a trust fund kid.
Where we're at.
So
McCloud, he's on his way over to have dinner with Brenda, and he's planning to basically ambush her.
Yeah.
Like a fucking total psychopath.
We should also mention that he asked her to dinner by saying, can you cook?
Can you cook? Can you make me dinner, woman?
You better be wearing an apron and nothing else.
It's about to get weird, folks. So buckle up.
Strap yourselves in.
Yeah.
Get your quickening ready. Tickle your quickening. So we open at Brenda's place where she's hiding loaded guns and recording devices in preparation for dinner with the Highlander.
It's already the makings of a nice romantic evening.
Yeah. The doorbell rings, and when she goes to answer, we see that she's got fucking swords all over the place.
It was like that hall where they fought in the Matrix, the second Matrix. You know, just weaponry everywhere.
Yeah.
Some John Wick type shit.
Yeah.
Did you notice how, like, thick and broad those swords are? Like, they're unwieldy.
Yeah. They're cutlasses. I mean, it's like, they're heavy. Those things are heavy.
What do you call it? The Saracen swords or whatever?
Yeah, they're
swords.
Saracen, because most of them were curved blades like scimitars and
scimitar
shit.
So
the doorbell rings, and when she goes to answer it, we see she's got swords. She stops for a second to check herself out in a mirror, then opens the door, and
she's adorned in her finest pirate wear.
She's like looking sort of like sailor chic.
Odd. Anyway,
McCloud greets her, and there's this long ass pause, and then he's like, are we gonna eat in the hall or should I come in?
He's like, good evening.
Yeah.
Which is like, fucking, you made it weird already, Highlander.
Well, your voice is terrible.
It's got that kind of element like vampires, like Dracula. It's explained in that
lore
that you have to invite them in. And so he's like standing on the threshold, almost like a vampire, not allowed to come in until she summons him.
That's how it felt like, are you going to invite me in?
Movie have been more or less interesting if they were all the immortals were just vampires?
Hell yes. I'd have been into it.
Like Blade. If it was like Blade.
Vampires fighting down to the last vampire.
I'd watch a Highlander Lost Boys crossover.
Yeah, exactly. Lost Boys, fucking awesome movie. That movie kicks ass. Anyway, way to go, Kiefer.
Got some cool saxophone playing in Lost Boys.
Thou shalt not steal. So she realizes that she's fawning over him for some reason. We never get like what the connection is.
Yeah, I don't know what she sees in him.
They've literally spent 3 minutes of non like sword fight time around one another. So she asks, she's like, can I take your coat? And he's like, no, I'll keep wearing it. Thank you very much. Red flag.
That was fucking weird.
He's got an exit plan. He knows what's up.
I thought that until we see him without it on.
He
had the katana on him, but he was like, no, I'll just keep wearing it.
They've had 5 minutes of interaction and he has been creepy the entire 100% time.
Of the time.
Fucking nuts.
She closes the door, starts walking down the hallway, and he weirds is like, where are you going?
Where are you going?
She just literally took 2 steps past you, mother.
She is walking into her own apartment.
I was like, did he want a hug or something?
I don't know what it was.
He's like, not going to hug me in greeting?
Yeah,
this was awful. This moment was awful to me.
No woman would find this behavior attractive.
I was most aggrieved maybe by this interaction than anything else in the movie.
Where are you going? Like,
this is her house.
It's her house. She's walking. She's leading you into her apartment.
She says, oh, I forgot to put on earrings, and tells him to make a drink while he waits. So in her room, she asks her reflection if she knows what she's doing.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what you're doing?
There's also the weird moment where he noticed there was like a painting of a Scotsman on her wall that he sort of like seemed like he got an off-screen erection.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice touch. I thought that was funny.
She's into Highlanders. So out in the dining area, he sits down a gift that he's brought, puts a wrapped bottle on the table, then starts looking around kind of suspiciously. Like he immediately thinks like, there's quickening all over the room. So he walks directly over to where she's hidden the gun.
Yes.
Because there's quickening there. Does having a read on someone's quickening make you aware of the shit they've done? Like, is it, I guess it's clairvoyance.
I don't know how it works. I just thought he was immediately just a fucking creep. Like he's just going through her shit.
Again, not aware of the extent because he walks right over like, he finds the recording device and the gun like immediately.
Yeah,
like,
he doesn't even like there's 3 drawers where the gun is hidden and he pulls open the one where the gun is. So he knows exactly what he's looking for.
Then like a fucking psychopath, he's like, I like your place, Brenda, as he's like going through her shit.
It sounds so ridiculous.
Interesting view.
That's another thing is like her place is pretty damn put together.
She's amazing. I'm still working on it.
What still needs work? I'm like, is there a bathroom that needs remodeling that we didn't see? Maybe. I don't know.
I still have some swords I haven't hung up yet.
Yeah, they're not polished quite yet. But yeah, McLeod looks out the window and sees Walt staking the place outside. Interesting view. And she doesn't quite hear him. So he walks right over to where she's hidden the tape recorder and shouts into the tape recorder, interesting view. Like, so while pouring drinks,
are we supposed to think that he's a cool guy?
Yeah.
As a viewer, are you supposed to be like, man, this guy's fucking cool. He's not creepy at all.
Andrew, what do you think?
I don't know. Like, I don't ever get the vibe. Like, the romance story is a tack on for me of like, we got to eat up some screen time. And I hate it. I don't like the romance story. It does show him to be like a creepy, asocial weirdo. 100%
predatory. He's like fucking predatory.
I'm trying to think of someone that could have played this role. Like if Mel Gibson had played this role, it would have come off badass at this time in history. Just like a young looking guy who could have played younger, but then also like these lines are supposed to read as funny.
Like
all this behavior
is
supposed to be
shit.
Funny.
Imagine fucking Swayze.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He probably could have done a killer Scottish accent,
or,
too.
Or Brosnan, I think we brought up in one of the previous episodes.
Pierce Brosnan would have been good.
That would have been bad.
I feel like in the mid to late 80s, Brosnan, you know, wet panties just by walking by.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dude, he had the look.
Remington Steele.
And it would have made sense.
Gorgeous, yeah. Yep. So anyway, while pouring drinks, he asks what she does for a living. Mm-hmm. She lies and says she works in acquisitions for the Met. He says that explains her sword fetish. She comes out of the bedroom with her earrings on. They're giant. They're enormous earrings.
And he's like,
those are nice.
He says about her appearance, was it exactly the same as it was before, except she's got the earrings now.
So they toast to nothing, and she takes
that was weird. Shall we toast? Yes. And then they just took a sip.
I think
I'm like, is that
sort of just gesturing?
That's some screenwriting. That's good.
So she takes a big gulp while he stops to smell the brandy, which he says was bottled in 1783. And she's like, wow, that's old.
That's a fucking understatement.
Yeah, 1783.
200 years old.
I would be like, should we be drinking this?
Those bottles exist, and they're like tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars.
So he continues. 1783 was a very good year.
It's creepy. It's creepy the way he sniffs that brandy, too.
Yeah, it is. And nothing about him is not sinister.
Sinister fucker.
And so he's like, Mozart wrote his great mass. The Montgolfier brothers went up in their first balloon. Egon recognized the United States as independent. It's like, why are you talking like that?
Fucking guy just got off Wikipedia.
He's got the voice of a cartoon villain.
Yes, he does. Exactly. Nothing. So as he's saying this, he's got his eyes closed like he's reminiscing. He takes a big swaller and she asks what the present is. She's like, OK, anyway, what'd you bring me? Mm-hmm. What'd you bring me, daddy? And he says, it's for you. No shit.
It better be. I got another date after this.
Can I open it? And he's like, if you wanna. So she opens it, and it's a copy of her book.
This dude is, like, pleased as a motherfucker that his scheme is, like, unfolding just as he'd planned as well.
He should have at least waited until he got dinner.
Right. he ate on the way over. He's like, I know this is not going to go my way.
He just knocked down some McDonald's in the cab.
Yeah, she's like, cool, I didn't have one of these. So her whole demeanor changes, and she's like, you're a bastard, and asks where he found the book. He says, I have an extensive library. He comes up behind her, and they continue their conversation to one another's reflections in the mirror. Which
normal.
I thought, this is an odd choice.
It's a very normal date for the Highlander.
You know, right. So
you know what I just realized while you were doing your impression is he's doing the exact same voice as Ren from Ren and Stimpy.
He sounds like a chihuahua.
Stimpy, you idiot.
Mozart wrote his great mass.
Mass.
C minor. So he says her bio oddly doesn't mention her working at the Met, but that it does say she's a forensics expert for the Popo, which seems an odd thing to include in your novel bio.
Well, I found myself thinking it would make more sense almost if she does work for the museum is a cop.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like that she's, you know, the museum.
Those two things
she
intersect.
Works part-time for the museum.
It would seem more likely that she probably would have been, I don't know, a ballistics expert. But fine, metallurgy's cool. Like ancient metallurgy. That's whatever.
Very valuable in police work, modern police work.
Right.
Anyway, maybe it explains where the money comes from. Or like you said, she's just got rich parents.
Yeah, I think she's grown up in in call me by your name, she was the child of a wealthy archaeologist.
That could be. This is like her grandparents' apartment that they've owned for like 50 years.
And she's
years
like, oh, I'm still fixing up the place because I moved in. Rent control, exactly. Yeah, yes, great mind. So he asks if she's working with Frank and trying to set him up, and she's like, I don't work for Frank. So he's like, why is Walt outside staking the joint out? And she's like, what are you going to do? And he turns the question back around on her, asking if she's going to turn off the tape or try to shoot him.
With her 45. That gun was not a 45.
It's a 38, right?
It was a 38. What? That's weird thing to get wrong.
That's a police special.
It was a little snub-nosed 38 that she had. That's just a weird detail to have obviously wrong.
Yeah. So he makes to leave, but she stops him, saying that she's not looking for a killer, but she is looking for the sword that killed Fazil. Mm-hmm. He wants to know why she's so interested. Why? What do you mean? You know why she's interested. She's a sword expert, guy.
Yeah, you read her book, you dummy.
He's got a passion for ancient swords.
And she said, that sword is not supposed to exist. She reiterates shit we've already heard, which is that sword was made in 600 BC, that the blade had been folded 200 times. But then she says that they didn't start making swords like that until the Middle Ages, and says that it'd be like finding a 747 1,000 years before the plane was invented, which that's kind of a cool analogy.
Yeah.
He shrugs her off and goes to leave again, but she stops him and says she wants answers. He basically tells her, "You're selfish," and walks out. "I'm a man. What about my feelings?"
That was what a weird thing to say on his part.
I love her interest in the sword.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like, it makes sense why she would be involved, but I feel like, again, as an avid listener of the podcast, y'all talk often about how they write out the romantic things for Schwarzenegger because he just can't make them happen. It would have been great
not working
if she had been like his sidekick, and then they went on all sorts of Highland adventures together later on as like... And
then you have
absolutely.
The Sam Malone and Diane Chambers, like, will they or won't they thing you could do. But yeah, it should force it. It's just not really working with these two.
To be like, they're star-crossed because we don't know how else to do this. And
There's been no chemistry, but they've been nothing but antagonistic to each other.
Yeah, they haven't been around one another for hardly at all. And so, yeah, this whole thing, but him being like, "My feelings are hurt."
That was a fucking weird thing to say. Like, he came over
A 500-year-old man. Shut the fuck up.
Well, he came over here to ambush her.
Yeah.
Like, and now he's trying to be on the moral high ground.
Yeah. Moral Highlander.
The Highlander ground.
Moral Highland.
Yeah. So next shot, we see McCloud out in the dark, misty night, hearing Ramirez's voice saying, "You must leave her, brother."
Ramirez fucking cock blocking from beyond the grave.
Yeah, Obi-Wan-ing this bullshit.
Such a weird shot. The lighting is weird. His hair looks weird. There's so much fog. Like,
his hair looks different in fucking every single scene.
That was the what got me more than anything was that fog.
Yeah,
it was thick.
Yeah, it's supposed to be atmospheric, I guess. So we fade back to medieval Scotland at Heather's toppled tower while Freddie croons in the background. At this point, I'd forgotten that Queen was even part of this movie. So anyway, shocker, Heather's still alive.
Heather survived.
I was shocked. So we get a little Scottish home life montage of she and McCloud surveying the wrecked tower from a cottage that we haven't seen to this point. So I think
it was new after the castle toppled. They built that shit. That setting was fucking incredible,
it's,
dude.
Oh, yeah,
I looked that up. That was just more of Glencoe, Scotland.
Yeah, I told you guys last episode. My sisters and mom went there recently, and my younger sister was like, "Yeah, it's the most beautiful place I've ever seen." So. Anyway, McCloud and Heather hug it out while the geese and coos do animal stuff. Then we see McCloud sharpening the family sword, grinning at Heather like an idiot while she chases the geese. How old is Heather again?
She's
like,
up there.
Why is she so simple?
She's a simpleton.
She's like, and he's like, "Oh, simple. She's a simple child."
At this point,
he's aged normally. We have to remember, like, he is.
No, he's still 18. He's still supposed to be 18.
He's supposed to be 18, but like, he's only been with Heather for probably, what, five, six years now.
It's maybe been another 5 years, so 10 years max they've been together.
Yeah. So the next shot, they're outside during winter, and so we get like, we're supposed to gather that the passage of time is happening, setting up the, because one day McCloud comes home from a ride and calls out Heather's name, and she comes up carrying a lamb, and we see she's gotten real old.
She's old.
That makeup is terrible.
It was bad.
It was rough, dude.
Terrible.
It was a big Queen crescendo, I think, at that moment as well, like the song wrapped up.
And then, the next moment we see that Heather's now bedridden in her old age. She calls him husband. And he says, "That's me." Stupid. That's so stupid.
What we're missing is the scene where she learns about McCloud's nature.
Yeah.
Because she has no knowledge that we've seen that he's an immortal. So obviously she's fucking figured it out by now, one would think.
So let's just say, like, if you're married to Paul Rudd, it's going to be, even from now, you could have been married to him for 20 years. And there's no real discernible difference between then and now. You're going to be like, okay, he's not aged. But it's going to come like when you're falling apart and he still looks 12. And it's like, oh shit, what's going on?
Some Benjamin Button shit going on.
Exactly.
I read somewhere that there's like deleted scenes where Ramirez had told Heather about it.
That would have been cool.
And like, it might have been the very same scene or some other time when Highlander was away doing whatever the fuck it was he goes off to do. His secret family.
Yeah, exactly. It happened at some point, and she was like, I'm cool with that.
Yeah. We're going to be together forever. Can't put any babies in you.
Yeah.
But,
and you're going to watch me die.
You get to rock my hard body until your dying day.
That's
Heather.
Right. So, And then she says as much. She says, I'll never know why you stayed with me. And he's like, I love you as much as when we first met. And she's like, me too.
Yes. See, that's where, to me, it doesn't seem like this is a damaging, toxic thing like no. Ramirez had promised.
Right.
You know, like this seems like he's enjoyed every bit of his time with her.
But I think more than anything, he's like protecting McCloud because it's like, that's, but like Andrew was saying earlier, that's bad heartbreak. Like you have a pet and you know it's going to die and it doesn't make it any easier when it does. But here's the thing too, is like, if you love well, then what's it matter?
Well, I think that playing into it, like there's a reason why you hear so often about like married, like people who've been married for 50 years or whatever, one of them passes away and then the other one passes within days or weeks. Because like the heartbreak, like that's a lot. Like psychologically, like it doesn't do anything to you physically, except that like you lose the will to live. And so like knowing that he can't die, like I think that that's Ramirez trying to save him the pain of what a normal person might have decided was
right
enough to end living.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. She says she doesn't want to die, that she wants to stay with him forever. This scene was actually pretty good. And he's like, me too. She asks him to light a candle in remembrance on her birthday, and he says he will. Then she tells him, you know, I wish we could have procreated. Mm. And she's like, don't look at me. And just
don't
let,
look at me.
Yeah, and
I don't
just
want you
let,
to see
let
me die.
Die in peace.
Then she's like, where am I? Yeah, where are we?
I get this moment where she's like,
does in she the have dementia?
I think she's like in the throes of dying. And yeah, like it would have made more sense if we'd seen like her forgetting maybe a little bit. But that's
because she looked fucking like a pretty healthy human being. But that's because she's a young
like,
human
where,
with old makeup.
Where are we? And I got that she was probably senile at this point.
Okay.
And he's like, we're in the Highlands. Where else? You dumb bitch.
That's
the
only place.
That's
the only place you've ever been.
Can you get anywhere else on horseback in a day? No, we stayed here. Anyway, next we see Heather's died. McCloud's carrying her up a mountainside. Uh-huh. Then we cut and we see he set fire to the cottage and his family broadsword stuck in the ground in a statement. I guess
I don't know what
I'm
that
moving
was about.
On. I'm moving on from Scotland.
Can we talk about how corny that sword is?
Yeah, the sword's not great.
Like, I don't know that they had his name written on it. That's odd to
on
me.
The hilt.
Yeah, it was, but it looked cheap. There was just something cheap about it.
It looked flimsy.
Yeah. Facts.
Maybe the McClouds weren't a wealthy clan.
That's also true. Well, and they were wealthy enough to have a keep and
they had
a whole
dope
like, army
castle,
behind them. I don't
but
know.
Who knows? He was ostracized.
That's
though,
right.
Many years ago.
Maybe he took the replacement sword, like dad's backup.
He's just stuck his own little McCloud label on it.
it's a knockoff FUBU sword.
We did see him doing some iron work earlier before he dunked his head in their drinking water. So maybe he put the McCloud on there himself. And it just looks really rudimentary.
Before he tainted their water, before he put lice in their water.
What if they made him, they're like, you have to leave the family sword, and he had to make his own family sword, and it was of poorer quality?
He's a shitty blacksmith.
Damn it. Yeah, he's a shitty, I like thinking about the Highlander being a shitty blacksmith.
Yep.
Shitty blacksmith sounds like a cool band name, too. Was it 2,000 years of horrors and shitty blacksmith? These are things we need to write down. So anyway, yeah. Heather's dead. We fade. We pull up in Central Park, 1985. A person is standing right in the middle of the Bow Bridge. McCloud approaches from the right side of the shot and calls out to the person, naming them Castigar. Castigar?
Yeah, Castigar. There's another great location, bridge there.
Castigar says, it's good to see you again, McCloud, and that it seems like they last saw each other 100 years ago.
Yep.
McCloud's like, yeah, it's been 100 years. That's why. So he's approached with his hand in his coat like he's got a sword or a gun or something, but he pulls his hand out in a joking manner and it's empty.
Uh-huh.
And I would not be fucking around like that with people who are all sworn to kill each other. No?
Yeah, so all the friendly relationships are weird to me. Like, would they throw down eventually?
It's the only excitement they have anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, but maybe Castigar was also trained by Ramirez. Like, it would be cool if there had been, like, relationships established ahead of time. Like if Ramirez had said, I've trained others like you and it's up to you guys to join forces to stop the Kurgan.
I know this could have,
like one line of dialogue would have fixed so much.
I don't know.
They could have had a lot less love story and a lot more of the good story.
Yeah. Castigar redeems himself by reaching into his coat and pulling out a flask. Like that's the best part.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Genius.
a flask full of
I was immediately like casting you as a kindred spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah. They laugh because even stupid shit's funny when you've been living on the edge for centuries. They embrace and start to catch up. Caskier offers a swig of the flask full of boom boom, whatever that is. Probably homemade bathtub.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hooch.
What does it take to get an immortal drunk? Probably a lot.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point, too. I mean, I would assume that so much seems like it happens on normal terms for these people. So I don't know, but
we're about to see a hammered Highlander.
You have to drink so much quickening to get drunk.
Yes. Is that what Boom Boom is? Is the like,
liquid,
like
quickening.
Liquid quickening. Ooh, that's a good band name also.
It is. Yeah. So Caskier lets us all know that apparently the gathering is happening soon and that the times almost caught them. How does Cat, did he receive a letter? Did the owl post come and let him know?
Drawn, that's what I'm wondering. If it got, they would throw down. They would throw down eventually, right?
Yeah.
If it was just those two left, they would fight.
Yeah,
one would assume.
I guess they have the, like the gentleman's agreement that
when they have no choice but to fight.
If it came down to two Ramirez disciples, couldn't they just be like, "Let's go our separate ways"? Or is that the deal? Is like until you kill the last one, there are no more ones.
I just don't understand
how it works.
We don't have to figure it out though.
It's not the job of this podcast.
We're not going to figure it out tonight, my friends.
We're going to start a podcast to do that. So Caskier says, we should have a party. And McLeod's like, fuck no. I remember the last rager you threw the year that Mozart wrote his great mass.
Yeah, throwback to 1783.
Yeah, so we get another fade and pull up through some mist, jumped back in time. Caskier recalls it was the year McLeod had a drunken duel on Boston Common with a dude named Bassett. Bassett's second recommends going, man, you should go with a heavier blade, but Bassett won't hear of it and opts for a rapier instead. McLeod's stumbling around and giggling and swiping at plants, which is awesome.
He played drunk pretty well.
Yeah. I love this scene.
The best.
Like this.
Yeah, this scene is great.
This is one of the moments that really make this movie for me of like how ridiculous your life would be were you immortal. Like,
But also, doesn't it make you wish that this movie had doubled down on it and shown McLeod in more times, more spaces?
Yeah.
Like, sort of like Assassin's Creed, yes. Like living all of these moments in time, or Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, for crying out loud. Like,
definitely.
More moments instead of just being like, we're going to jump back and show two distinct points in history and that's it.
My feelings were that this is a very unusual scene. It feels out of place almost in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it feels just like, in some ways, it feels pointless. Like, there's really no reason this doesn't further the main story at all, but it also demonstrates the kind of fun you could have with this premise.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe you needed to be leaning into more of just, or like sequels or how it would work as an episodic TV show where it's like almost you can time
like
travel
because
every episode he could be in a totally different era.
Exactly.
Doing a totally different battle or adventure.
Yeah. Yeah, instead of, did the Highlander TV show did that, or did most of it happen? I think there were flashbacks to old times, but then you would end up fighting someone in modern
all
times.
Present day adventures.
Yeah, I frankly don't know. I never really watched it.
I saw some episodes of it, but
did he ride around on a fucking motorcycle a lot?
Well,
I'm thinking
Renegade.
I'm thinking about Renegade. Yes, I am.
That was a good show too.
Was it?
Yeah,
that would have been a good crossover.
Was that Antonio Sabato Jr.?
No, that was Adrian Paul.
Oh no, Summon Lamas.
Yes,
Lorenzo Lamas.
Adrian Paul was Duncan MacLeod.
Was Highlander. Yeah.
Okay.
So, so MacLeod's stumbling around, giggling, swiping plants. Bassett second tells MacLeod that Bassett's waiting, and MacLeod's like, tell him I'm ready, and falls down.
His wig was like all a
this
kilter.
Shit was so funny. He gets up and thinks that he's gone blind because his wig's in his eyes. Bass is like, on guard, sir. And he swipes McLeod's blade, and then he just stabs him.
Right through.
Yeah. Bassett second runs up and tries to kiss him in congratulations.
That was odd.
As they walk off, McLeod stands up and is like, Bassett, is that you? Bassett second is like, you must have missed. And then so Bassett grabs his sword again and stabs McLeod again. They turn to walk again. McLeod gets up again, laughing this time. And then this happens over and over and over,
over
again.
And over.
But it's funny.
Yeah.
It is.
It's clever.
But wouldn't McLeod would be a bloody mess, right? Like there's no blood.
There should be blood all over him.
Okay. Definitely should
be
finally,
blood. McLeod. Yeah.
There will be blood.
There will be. My boy!
I've abandoned my child!
I abandoned my boy! So finally, McLeod asks Bassett to stop stabbing him. He's like, hey, I'm sorry for calling your wife a bloated warthog. But then he laughs because he still thinks it's a pretty sick burn. And so he bids Bassett good day and walks off, but Bassett second runs up with pistols, like, shoot him in the back, shoot him in the back. So Bassett weirdly shoots his own dude instead.
That was a weird, it was vicious and weird.
It's so strange.
He was so fed up with his manservant, his second here. Yeah.
And that's apparently one of the scenes that they cut from the like American release that.
Yeah, that's not in the theatrical. Yeah. It's only in the director's cut.
I guess because of budget and time constraints, but man, like, go shoot some more funny scenes where McCloud is in different eras doing stuff.
Shit faced. Yeah. Yeah. Every scene he's got a drinking problem.
Yeah, make it show the like the ridiculousness of life without like close human connections or the like stupidness of living forever, because I don't know about y'all, but
like Groundhog Day.
It's like violent Groundhog Day.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because like that seems miserable. Living forever, living one life seems like plenty. That's, I mean, maybe it's all that we've got, but it's like it seems like, you know, it would drag.
That's enough.
You'd be bored.
So we jump back to 1985 to a Kurgan seedy motel. We get a long follow shot of him walking from the elevator to the lobby where the desk manager asks how he liked Candy. Candy is the sex worker with whom we reckon, I thought that surely he'd killed her.
Right.
But she gets sent up to his room earlier in the movie. And anyway,
she said you were kinky.
Yeah, Candy said you were kinky, and I'm shocked but glad she's alive.
Yeah.
Over 6,000 years, like, he's probably done it all. You know what I mean?
And Kurgan's got to get weird. Like, he's got an appetite for hours and days.
That shot where Kurgan was walking through the hallway, you know, and everything, mm-hmm. that was fucking direct ripoff from Terminator.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When he's Terminator's walking through the hallway of his CD motel, and everyone's sort of ducking out of his way.
So Kurgan tells the guy, never speak to me.
He turned like choke slammed him basically.
Then he turned him back.
Did dude have like a massive herpes sore on his mouth?
I think that he's supposed to look like he's been doing meth or something.
A meth
he
mouth.
Looks in meth
okay.
mouth.
Okay.
So he turns around, looks at the desk clerk, who he didn't mean anything by it. The guy was like, and then Kurgan walks over, grabs him by the throat, jerks him up, repeats that the clerk is to never speak to him again, and asks if they understand each other. And the clerk's like nodding vigorously. And then Kurgan's like, good, and pushes him backwards. Then desk clerk mutters that I hope you get your head chopped off, which.
So odd thing to say.
I don't know how the movie ends at this point, having never watched, but I'd say there's a better than 50% chance that happens.
Is the idea that the whole city is like in the grips of headhunter mania?
I think so.
Now, because otherwise that line is just like, wow, that's a prescient thing to say.
I think in the newspaper era, especially at this time when that's the way that people are getting their news, and at the, you know, 6 o'clock and 11 o'clock or whatever on a weeknight. That people are like
headhunter like on lashing. The loose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So everyone's talking about Son of Sam or whatever. So somewhere in the city, a rando we've never met, played by Rogue Two from Empire Strikes Back.
I found them.
Repeat, I found them. Is driving around in a Trans Am full of guns. And I'm like, this is a vigilante.
Just riding loose on the seat.
Yeah.
It is way too late in the game for this shit. Yeah, like to be bringing in a full new character.
Who is this?
That dude, I feel like is entirely like too common in 2022. Like just a dude with a lot of guns, just looking for some trouble.
I want to help. Like I'm the Casey Jones of Ninja Turtles.
I'm a good guy with a gun.
Yeah. So he's driving around an area where there are sex shops and sex workers abound. They're standing on street corners, and that, of course,
that's what I'm saying. He went to like a seedy neighborhood.
I'm here to
look
kill people.
For trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
To help people.
To probably also receive a sad hand job.
Well, I think that he's supposed to be like what are they called? The guys with the red berets and the like black shirts.
Oh, angels. Something angels or
guardian angels. The guardian angels.
Guardian.
New York
angels,
City
yeah.
in like the 80s that like quote took back the streets full of their nonsense, but like yeah it's early, and then like he stumbles upon this sword fight and
bro, what the fuck, like cruising an alley's like, oh shit, here it is, here's the sword fight I've been looking for.
There's some people I could shoot and get away with.
Slams on the brakes, backs up, grabs a weapon and says, okay, Marine, this is for real. So starts to creep up toward the duel.
So like a real experience that I had in New York City one time was that I was like just walking around. We stopped at one of those ice cream trucks and got some ice cream and we're sitting in the park. And then here come these two dudes that have full blown swords. And I think later on that we figured out that they were like fake lightsabers, but they had a full on sword fight in the middle of this park in New York City. And we just sat there eating ice cream, watching them. So I feel like
New York is the most baffling place in the world.
I feel like it's perfectly reasonable that two men in an alleyway in the middle of the night might be having a friendly sword fight.
In college, I was filming. I was helping another friend, Casey, a friend of ours, film his student film. And we were filming in some park out in like Gwinnett County, suburban Atlanta.
Right.
And it had to do with guns. So like toy guns. But actors were like sort of chasing each other around with guns. And at some point, the police came. We're like, yeah, some people called and said there were people running around with guns in the park. And it was like, this was a simpler time. It was probably, you know, early 2000s.
Yeah, like nowadays, it's like gunned down anyway.
Police show up shooting first and asking questions later. But
that's fucked up.
But it is like, yeah, you see, I'm sure people who saw us were like alarmed by what they were seeing. Thankfully, no, there was no good guy with a gun to shoot us both dead.
That's the thing, is like somebody shown up and just been like unloading. Well, I thought they had it. I had probable cause. Motherfucker. Anyway, we don't get political on this podcast.
Yeah.
So anyway, Vigilante grabs a weapon, says, okay, Marine, this is for real. Starts to creep towards the duel. He rounds a fence and we see that it's Castigear and a Kurgan. The Vigilante moves from cover to cover, egging himself on. He's like, come on, you got this. You got this. So in the duel, Castigear is totally on the defensive the entire time. Vigilante yells like, what the hell is going on? No one responds. Then all of a sudden, a Kurgan does a pirouette, chops off Castigear's head.
Alas, and rest, poor Castigear.
Yeah, rest in peace, Castigear. Like, we literally have no idea who you are or were.
We hardly knew you.
Like, wouldn't it have been cool to have a moment in, like, a back in time moment to, like, show
that was he meeting? wasn't even present at the duel on Boston Common, which is a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, shouldn't he have been Highlander's second?
Part of the party.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Something. Or party, and he had to do him blow off Victorian hookers. No, that wasn't even Victorian, was it? That was like way before Victorian.
It could have been Georgian. Before,
yeah,
probably Georgian, yeah. So but yeah, like lots of missed opportunities to really like flesh this, like, and things that probably could have been done in a few shots. Like
of course.
Like a day of filming, like get it done. But if we know anything about canon, that's a Herculean ask. So
a day of filming is all you get.
Yeah, that's right. This whole movie was shot in 6 hours.
You got Connery for a week.
The Vigilante seen quite enough and unloads on a Kurgan. He empties the clip.
Yes.
There ought to have been many, many, many more bullet holes.
Nah, I think he like, only hit him 6 times. He's just bad at it.
How did he only? He was like shooting it essentially like just yards away, just spraying at him and only hit him like 8 times.
Yeah, the ubiquitous 80s Uzi, which I love.
Did you see the t-shirt he's wearing?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm going to talk about the t-shirt in a second because it's fucking awesome.
I want
one. And it's also topical. It's fine. So the ruckus gets the attention of all the hookers and Johns in the area who come a running. Vigilante dude makes his way toward where a Kurgan's body should be, but isn't. He looks understandably worried and confused. He turns, but is, of course, immediately stabbed by a Kurgan.
Kurgan pops up behind him from where he should have been in plain sight,
I guess. Right, like right there. And this is, Andrew, like you were just saying, this is the first clear shot of the dude's shirt, which says, hey, Moscow, up yours, with a line drawing or like a graphic of St. Basil's. Yeah, in crosshairs with a nuke headed towards it.
Fuck. That's grim.
Yeah.
We got listeners in Russia, which we love you guys.
Yeah.
But we hope that there's peace in our time soon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Tell Putin to
chill his shit out.
Yeah. Nothing good
just
can
go
come
ride
of
your
this.
Horses and take your shirts off.
Yeah.
And
go wrestle a bear. Russia, majestic nation, centuries of history, millennia. It doesn't need. Yeah. This is unnecessary. Anyway, a Kurgan lifts the dude off the ground, slings his body against a wall. Then we
that
get
shit happens way too much in movies where you like you pick the guy up with your sword and you have him over your head. Like
right.
He would just slide down the blade.
Well,
I don't
the
think...
blade's sharp enough, but it's probably hitting bone and stuff. It's like caught on his rib cage, probably.
Fuck. That's dark.
So then we get a bit of business we haven't seen since the beginning of the movie where the body of a vanquished immortal starts to glow and levitate. There's some lightning strikes. The Kurgan assumes the same position he did after killing Ramirez, where he's like holding his sword in front of him. And we gather that he's absorbing Castagir's life force. He's also making massive O-face. Like,
The dude, they sort of like zone out during the quickening, it seems, which seems like that would be the ideal.
Is the quickening also an event? It's not only a substance, but also an event.
This would have been the ideal moment for McCloud to pop out and lop dude's head off.
I know that would have been the strategy, is have two of you go, one of you wait in the shadows while the first one fights.
But it also would have been a great parallel to them at the Boston Commons thing, to like he was his second. So one shows up and then the second jumps out, but it didn't go off the way that they had hoped. Man, we should write movies.
Yeah.
Fuck. Anyway,
maybe they'll get the new Highlander right, the one that's supposed to be in the works.
Is that happening?
I hope so.
Has to. It's so rich, and they can actually like flesh out the story.
You could do it right.
Yeah,
with real martial artists.
I hope they change it to Netherlander.
Niederlander. Ned Niederlander. It's Martin Short. It's Ned Niederlander from Three Amigos. So anyway, the vigilante and all the frightened sex people watch in fear and amazement. The absorption must be an especially potent one because we get some violent explosions from inside of neighboring buildings and the sewers.
The manholes.
And all the sex shops. Everything's going up in flames.
There was that old couple that rolled up like fucking Midwestern mom-pa kettle. Like, what are they doing cruising prostitute alley at this hour? Like,
well, they were looking to get some strange. So Kurgan notices everyone watching, so he picks up his sword, runs toward the parked car where the couple's inside. He slices open the roof of the car, removes the old man in the driver's seat, and climbs in. The old lady for some reason makes no effort to escape, which I can only attribute to shock, I guess. Kurgan looks over her, smiles, calls her mom, and then barks at her like a dog. This freaks her out, and she still doesn't get her out of the car as they drive off.
She's screaming for daddy.
She's like, daddy, help me, daddy, over and over again. That's some very Ronald Reagan, Nancy.
Maybe
Reagan
it's like a Mike Pence nonsense where they call each other mother and father.
mother. So the next thing we know, she's on the hood of the car and holding on for dear life.
Yeah.
Cut to the hospital where Walt's telling Frank there's been another beheading, but no one's come forward as a witness. Mm. Frank says, that's New York for you.
Yes.
He then asks Walt about someone named Matunas. Walt says the guy's a former Marine, non-vet, survival fetishist. The dude's CO, he said, was paranoid, but he's mostly an okay guy.
That's some police were doing quick work. They've already spoken to this guy's ex-CO like 10 years ago
or
some
shit. They just called him up.
They're on the ball.
Yeah, the Marine.
Who was his commanding officer?
Marines,
I'd like to speak with him.
The Marines information hotline runs 24/7, 365.
Get me Lieutenant Dan.
Get me Lieutenant Eckhart.
Eckhart, think about the future.
So this dude was like the original, though, like good guy with a gun.
Oh, yeah.
Like that bullshit fantasy, like survival nut. Those guys keep to themselves in the woods, right? They don't go fucking cruising through the rough neighborhoods of New York with a car full of Uzis.
Yeah.
So Frank and Walt walk into an area where a patient is abed. It's the vigilante who somehow survived being impaled. Frank shows the guy a pic of McCloud's like, this is the guy, right? This is the guy who stabbed you, right? And the guy's like, no.
No.
And Frank seems to be trying to bait vigilante guy and just, can you please just tell me that this is the guy?
It was dark in that alley. And it's like, dude, that's some fucking police work at its finest.
Yeah, exactly. Can you just say this is the guy?
Just lie.
This is going to be a lot of paperwork if you don't. But the guy says, no, I would not forget the face of the man who was trying to kill me. And he had a scar across his neck. And his raised voice gets the attention of like all the fucking patients on this hospital wing. This news doesn't sit well with Frank. The dude asks, he's like, hey, are you depressed? And Frank's like, yeah. And the guy says, well, you don't know shit about being depressed because even with a truck full of weaponry, I couldn't protect myself.
I feel like that should be the moral of the story.
Yeah, just like,
it's like maybe you don't need all those fucking guns. Yeah. Bro.
Just like all the supposed good guys with a gun, he was of no use.
Yeah, right. So he tells Frank he pumped the guy full of lead and somehow the guy still got up. Frank tells the guy to calm down and it's like, could you work with a sketch artist, come up with a composite? As Frank leaves, the vigilante stops him and tells him what happened with Castigier's body and the lightning and explosions.
So we don't hear any of that. It was weird the way they did it.
Yeah. And then Frank and Walt are like, right. So walking down the hall, Frank tells Walt to keep the talk about the sword fights and glowing bodies under wraps. Cut to someone else reading a New York Post announcing yet another decapitation.
Was it the dude at the hot dog cart?
Yes, the hot dog vendor who asks Frank and Walt if they've read the paper, saying he's throwing words out there like incompetent.
Yeah, what does incompetent mean?
Yeah, I love that. So cut to a library or some such where Brenda's doing some digging on Nash.
I thought it must have been the Hall of Records. When I tried to pause it, and it had like
the Gotham Hall of Records.
The different shelves had different, you know, like Bronx, Brooklyn, whatever on it.
That's a beautiful library, though.
It's gorgeous. Gorgeous.
It's awesome. I don't think they'd have records on the shit that was going down in Syracuse, though, which is what she finds.
Unless it's a state archive, maybe. But then they would have to, like,
photocopy.
I mean, pre-internet, you had to print all that shit out, so maybe there's multiple copies all over the state in, like, certain strategic hubs.
Maybe.
Can you imagine how long information gathering took at this time?
Well, we're about to see some warp speed information gathering.
It doesn't happen like this. That's for damn sure. So, she finds a birth certificate dated October 1945. We cut to her showing the certificate to a doctor who he says he remembers delivering the baby, but it was unusual at the time because the mother was unwed. Used to be a stoning offense, he jokes.
And lets out a big laugh.
We used to kill bitches.
He looks like he's just come off of the country club golf course from Caddyshack, too.
Right?
He's wearing like plaid pants.
He had a golf bag sitting there in the office.
It's very summer on the Cape.
He was very dismissive also, just talking about this case in which he lost patience.
Statute of limitations.
You really fucked this one up, Doc.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was thinking.
So he says the mother had the baby but didn't survive and the baby died too. This flummoxes Brenda. We know this because of the creepy music. So we cut to her office the next day. A coworker tells her he spent the whole night going through deeds to Nash's property in Chelsea, back through five previous owners, including the original owner, a guy named Montague, back in 1796. He did all this in just one night.
Oh, yeah.
With no internet.
With the most comprehensive and easy to navigate database in the world.
Yeah. Full of digital signatures.
What? Yeah.
This dude figured this shit out overnight.
That man should.
Like, not even during business hours, like when you could maybe go to a place and access these records.
He would later go on to create Google.
Yeah.
And what the fuck does this have to do with forensics? Like, your coworker calls you, can you look at all the property deeds for the last 500 years at this address? Like,
and he's
what does
like,
this have to do with forensics?
Like, so Brenda? No blood samples or anything? Yeah. So anyway, in all five cases, he found a death certificate for a kid with the same name who died at birth years before he pretended to sign for his inheritance. So the syntax of that sentence is bad, but we all get it.
Close like, enough.
So then he says, just in case there was any doubt, he's somehow gotten a hold of and digitized five signatures over the course of 200 and some years.
He's got handwriting analyzing software.
Old ass fucking computer.
Running off a floppy disk.
Yeah, which all match Russell Nash's / McLeod's handwriting.
Did y'all
pause it to look at any of the names that he's used over the years?
No. Other than Montague.
Adrian Montague, my favorite.
Yeah.
Jacques Lefebvre. Lefebvre.
You are not the beef.
You are not the Lefebvre. Alfred Nicholson, and then his most recent before Russell Nash, Rupert Wallingford.
Fuck. These all sound like bad auto-generated.
Yeah,
names.
They're pretty terrible.
How did any of this happen?
I don't know.
That I don't even think handwriting analysis, like science, isn't even an exact.
No, it's been dismissed.
I don't think
it's
the same, but it's not.
I feel like it's someone's just in the 80s. I feel like it was someone eyeballing it.
Yeah, for this technology, for like people watching this movie are like, holy shit, this is real advanced
space age shit.
Enhance.
Enhance. Yes. Oh. Can you zoom, enhance?
Can you, pause it? Clear, enhance this image.
Pivot the photo 90 degrees.
Oh, my God. This part threw me. The tech tells Brenda, What we must be dealing with is a guy who's been creeping around since at least 1700, pretending to croak every once in a while, who leaves all his goods to kids who've been dead for years and then assumes the identities. That's the conclusion?
It turned into an episode of The X-Files.
That's the this guy. But the fact that this dude's like, yeah.
That's the only logical explanation.
I'm all in on
this. It seems so much easier to just not make, you know, like put the property or whatever you own in the name of a trust and then never talk to anyone ever.
Yes.
Well, Ramirez didn't teach McLeod banking or inheritance law. All he taught him was sword fighting and breathing underwater.
He didn't have enough time.
We have to go with what we've
We're
got.
We're brothers!
He was getting around to financial and estate decisions.
Before he got his head lopped off.
The next class was going to be immortal microeconomics.
So anyway, Brenda's like, this is impossible. Yeah, no shit. So cut to some time later, the front page of the new edition, the New York Post, has a sketch of the alleged killer with the headline, "Have you seen this man?" And it does not look like the Kurgan.
No, it's terrible.
It didn't look like Kurgan at all. There was no likeness.
It does look like legendary 20th century opera singer George London.
Yes.
But obviously not.
It kind of looks like Tom Hardy, if Tom Hardy was like drawn in a police sketch from his like indecipherable Revenant character.
Is like, could you understand a word he said? No, Tom Hardy then.
You look like John Bernthal.
Yeah. He's like, didn't look like anyone.
But yeah, the city is in the grips of headhunter panic. That's what we're getting from this.
Yeah.
They're all looking for the wrong guy, apparently, because this dude doesn't look like anybody we've seen so far in this movie.
Not. Yeah, they're going to gain no ground with that sketch in the paper.
Oh, man, we've done it.
What's going to happen? Who fucking knows?
Some weird shit.
The quickening at the gathering is going to happen.
All we know is it's going to happen soon in the city of New York.
Yep.
And that's it.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Do you want to know what happens next?
Andrew, do you know what happens next?
I do.
Okay.
All right, so if you guys want to meet back with us in a week's time with our friend Andrew, tune in.
Yes.
Don't miss it.
We'll be back.